20 million Zygons have been allowed to take human form and are now living amongst us.
Any living thing in this world, including my family and friends, could turn into a Zygon and kill me. It's not paranoia when it's real.
Are you really sending me a distress signal?
Doctor, the ceasefire's broken down.
They kidnapped Osgood and they've stolen the location of every Zygon on Earth.
We have a Zygon revolution in our hands.
We've won the first battle.
There will be truth.
And now we are going to begin the war.
Or there will be consequences.
We end the world.
I think you might be right.
Oh, what?
The end of the world.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start by welcoming back the only one who is with us so far yet, Lee Shackelford. How are you?
I am well. And Clarence is on his way, everybody, so he will be joining us, we know. But I want to start off with an apology.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
I've been listening to our previous episodes, our most recent episodes, and I have to say, I'm somebody who calls himself a voice talent professional, and I have a certain standard about recording things, including podcasts and so on, and a lot of that has to do with superfluous noise. And I can be very snippy with other people about them making noises. But my golly, if you've been listening to the recent Discussing Who's and you hear something annoying going on in the background, I would say 9 times out of 10, it's me. I have dropped things. I have decided to play with the fidget spinner, which I was sure nobody could hear. It's distinctly heard throughout. I've decided I can do a quick side Google search for something, and so then you hear my keyboard. I just listened to that thinking, I thought you knew better than that.
Well, you know, unlike our friend Olivia on the Oz 9 podcast, I'm going to say it is my fault because it's my fault. It's not your fault.
No, I know you could go in and cut all that out if you had nothing else to do in your life.
So I'm being lazy. That's my point. Well, I have just relied on that little disclaimer at the beginning of the episode, right, that reads, this episode was recorded and is presented live as it was recorded.
Yep, as it was. I know, but how much easier it would be if I just didn't do it in the first place. And my point is, I know better. So I apologize to you and everybody else. But my goodness, it was me dropping the screw cap off my gin bottle the one I've heard most recently. I thought, okay, now that's sad. He's sitting here, you know, with a mixed drink with ice in it. Anyway.
Oh, so literally that drink that he had was both shaken and stirred.
Yes. And everybody heard all parts of it. Okay. But something else then, if you're joining us by video, you can see I'm wearing my fourth Doctor scarf, and that relates to Osgood and the episode we're going to talk about tonight. But I did, to get a little more serious here for a minute, I want to mention this was knitted for me by a lady named Kate Walenga, who was a podcaster and a friend of mine. And she had a podcast. She was a counselor, among other things, a grief counselor, people with all kinds of issues to work through. And her podcast was called Ignorance Was Bliss, which is a lovely, lovely title. I had the honor of being a guest on episode 319, if you want to look that up, of Ignorance Was Bliss. But anyway, she had a monstrous, just kind of the perfect storm of health problems. And they finally claimed her earlier this year. And I've just sort of been looking for the time on this show to say, hail and farewell, Kate Walenga. She was an extraordinary person. And I think of her every time I wear this scarf. So there it is. So for people who are hearing this by audio, I'm wearing my fourth Doctor Kate Walenga scarf because it relates to this episode, but mostly in memory of her. So there you go.
very good, faithful adaptation, just looking at the scarf itself. Mm-hmm. So how long is the scarf?
Well, that's what I love about it, is she said, do you want the real thing, you know, which is 14 feet long, or would you like something that you can actually practically wear? So it is a miniature version, but all the colors are in the right sequence.
Right.
And in proportion. So it's only, I guess about, it's 6 feet long.
Okay. So that she's sounds about my, about the length of the one that I have.
Yeah. So, yeah, but she scaled it down so that it can actually be. Everybody who worked on the Fourth Doctor shows say that they don't know how Tom Baker could walk around without tripping on it, because they were always, Elizabeth Sladen used to say, I tripped over it, but he never did.
Anyway. Interesting. Interesting.
It was a part of his body.
Well, and it's probably too, with anything, you get accustomed to wearing it and you know how to move it so that it doesn't, it doesn't interfere with what you're doing. So maybe after as many years as he wore the scarf, it just worked for him.
Yeah. Becomes second nature.
Indeed. So. Indeed. I always love good stories, and I love having things that have a memory that, you can share a memory with something that you've got. And that's awesome. So I'm really glad to hear that story, and love the fact that it has a story that goes along with something that also represents something that we both love, Doctor Who.
There you go. So,
but considering that we might have someone listening to us for the very first time, I have a question. Lee Shackelford, what do you always like saying?
I like to say, welcome aboard. That, we know you got other things you could be doing. And for whatever reason, you've chosen to hang with us. And we really appreciate that. There's a lot of Doctor Who podcasts out there. And you may have gotten the word that we're the ones where we don't just spend an hour bitching about things, but we are. But we like to try to find, even in the episodes that we didn't particularly care for, we like to try to find the positives.
Indeed, indeed.
Support each other in our differences of opinion, and instead of fighting about it. So
now that does not mean, let's just be clear. That does not mean that there are things that we don't like. There are.
That's right. Yeah, we can like it without getting ugly about it, and we can disagree without having to bring each other down. So we're trying to be role models for fandoms everywhere.
Indeed. I think I can knowingly say we have together recorded, as of this date, at least 310 Discussing Who episodes. There is only one of those that have not, or has not, seen the light of day. And that was the last of the Chibnall before the time or the power of the Doctor. So there is one out there that we said, no, we're going to have to re-record it, because it was just a little bit.
We just sat down and hated.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's not what we're here to do.
In the chat, Wingrace asks if I just said a word that's not allowed. We kind of wiggle around on what the rating of this podcast is. Anyway,
it's
my apologies if anyone's offended by that term. I just mean that we don't complain and carry on for no reason.
It's probably wibbly wobbly, whatever meets the moment, timey wimey. Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
Well, no, you have to declare a rating on Apple Podcasts, don't you? You have to say...
I think I say it's for everybody.
Yeah.
So,
there you go.
We're not we're not safe for work. So, there you go.
That's right.
All right. Indeed. Well...
We draw the line.
We draw the line, but... I'm just going on my puns tonight, and Clarence is not even here yet. We're not going to draw a line that a toy maker might walk over. All right. So I want
Since he's not here, I'll say, oh, God.
Oh, God. All right. So I want to get into the news. And The news that I want to get into is we finally have a asterisk by this date because we're going to talk about it, but we finally have a release date for the next series, the 2024 series of Doctor Who. Whatever you want to call it. Is it series 14? Is it season one? It's the 2024 series.
That's what it is.
The 11th asterisk of May, 2024. Mm-hmm. 11 asterisk. Why do I say 11 asterisk, Mr. Shackelford?
Because in some places, they're going to get it on the 10th. And we, here in Los Estados Unidos, may be one of those markets where we get it on the 10th.
Okay. So as they are releasing, they being the BBC, it will be released at midnight on the 11th on BBC iPlayer.
I see.
Simultaneously, when it is released on the 11th on BBC iPlayer at midnight, so too, so that it is simultaneous around the world, we will get it 7 p.m. Eastern.
7 p.m., yeah.
6 p.m. Central on the 10th. Then it will air traditionally on the over-the-air, you know, television, BBC, BBC One, later that evening.
Well, do you think that means that they're trying to avoid social media, people on social media backing up the truck of spoilers?
Well, yes, absolutely. But would it have been better to have released it on normal, say at 5:45, and we get it at 1:45 or, you know, 12:45 or what in that afternoon?
This is very interesting because it's like that's working for what we're accustomed to thinking of as prime time here. But then in the UK, people would be getting it at the same time. I mean, they don't have to wait 5 hours. They're already 5 hours ahead of us. But so for them, the launch will be in the middle of the night. So, you know, the next day they can, you know, watch it whenever they want.
So our friend Janet Hall in the chat says her Brit friends are not happy. You know, and I've heard that a lot, and I would be interested to know what our friend Dave Cooper thinks of that. Is, you know, is he happy? And my next question, and this is a question also maybe for Dave or anyone listening who are in the UK and would know the answer to this, is it when you say released on iPlayer, when they say released on iPlayer, I'm assuming that if you had iPlayer on your Apple TV or whatever smart TV, if you had the iPlayer app on your TV, that likewise it would be released at midnight. So you would be able to watch it not just on a computer or on your phone. I would assume you would be able to watch it on the app just like we can watch it on Disney Plus.
Correct. And Dave will, he'll stay up all night to watch it. So that's no. that's not going to worry him.
So that leads me to wonder what the, and I don't want to say gripe because that's not the word I'm looking for, but I wonder what the dislike or concern for those who are in the UK have about the midnight release. And then because if you still have access to it, is it depriving you of it, of something?
I guess the envy might be that we get to have it in the evening where we can, you know, you can make family time and sit down and watch it. And then they have to wait until the next day. And if you have to work that day, then you've still, you know, you're still going to get some spoilers and by your loudmouth American friends who won't shut up about it. And I don't know.
And you've got a very good point, because even though I do have access to it, if I get up at 6 a.m. and go to work, and then I have to make sure I've not talked to anyone, and if this is a British institution, I can see some of maybe where that would rub you the wrong way.
Yeah.
Why not just let us see it when we normally see it, and then everyone else have to time shift around that? So I could kind of see that. So let me ask you a question. Do you think this is a Disney Plus fueled decision?
I think almost certainly yes. And that would be another reason for our friends in the UK to be hacked off about this, because it's just another step of what they fear is the ultimate Americanization of Doctor Who.
Okay. So, you know. Lead up question to that. Not only are we getting the first episode, but we're getting the first and second episode released at the same time.
So we get
a 1-2 punch. My question to you then becomes, is that okay? I mean, we get two episodes, yay, but we get them at the same time.
I wonder why.
Thoughts?
I mean, why?
Are they a 1 or 2 parter? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah,
but then what? I don't get showing them back to back if they are. I mean, that would be unprecedented, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Kind of. I mean, the way I grew up, and I think you did too, we were seeing the show on our public broadcasting stations, and they would cut the serials together into, you know, a movie, basically.
Right.
When I first saw Genesis of the Daleks, it was 3 hours long, you know? So that would be kind of like what they're doing here, but I don't know.
You know, I find that interesting in the sense of, I don't know if it's 8 or 10 episodes, you know, but it's not the long episodes like we used to, you know, get the 13 episodes in a season. So I think, Wingrace in the chat says there will be 7 episodes or 8 episodes. That gives us 7 weeks of content. He brings up that next point I want to make, which is that's one less week that we get Doctor Who.
That was my first thought. It was like, hey, that sounds like they could do that every Friday night, right? Do 2 episodes, and then we'll be done in 4 weeks.
Okay. So is that, and I'm going back to my earlier question, is that a Disney Plus thing, or is that just a reality of how things are released now? Because think of it, a lot of shows, when they come back, release the first and second episode, 1-2 punch.
We've had shows that have released an entire season.
Absolutely.
At once. So it's an experiment. My friends in the industry are just talking about how everything is kind of up for grabs right now, that nobody seems to know what they're doing. We don't know what's going to happen next. And the big streamers, including Disney, who is, you know, the daddy of them all, they seem to just be throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. So may just be a total, hey, let's see if they like having 2 Doctor Whos.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. Tell me your opinion on this.
Yeah.
You have someone, or you're an executive at Disney Plus. You are now introducing pretty much confidently introducing Doctor Who to a new audience.
Right.
People who may not have Max, who may not have BritBox, who may be experiencing Doctor Who for the very first time. If you are Russell T. Davies and you are trying to help get that out to a new audience, wouldn't having their first exposure, a 1-2 punch, you can watch these specials, but now you can see the new season, new series, 2 episodes might help hook you.
It would depend on the episodes, but yeah. Yeah. I wonder.
All right.
I really wonder.
So imagine for me for a moment.
That's got to be the thinking though, doesn't it?
I would think so. So let's imagine for a second. If you imagine you've never seen to the 2005 series of Doctor Who.
Right.
So you have watched Rose, spoilers, but you have watched Rose, you have been introduced to Rose, the Doctor and Rose go off at the end of the episode. Would you not be, if you're entertained and were watching that first episode, would you not be enthralled enough to maybe want to see where they went first? Where did they go first? And having that ability to see that first trip, would that might help solidify your interest as opposed to, oh, well, they left and, well, I've got to wait a week to find out.
Yeah.
I could argue that either way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, cliffhangers work for a reason. And having your leads leave at the end of the first episode, you know, to me, that constitutes a cliffhanger. It's like, hey, you left the audience behind. Wait for us. And, you know, for a while, it was there was sort of a paradigm of Doctor Who that the first story was about the Doctor figuring himself out and meeting a new companion. And then the next episode, we would go to another planet. And then the third episode, we would go to sometime in Earth's past.
Yes. Yeah. You saw, for anyone watching me, I went, yep, yeah, you're going back.
Yeah, throwing your thumb over your shoulder. Yeah. So I would say that if you want to introduce people to the formula, you'd have to give them three episodes at once.
Good point.
But I don't know. But I just don't see the advantage of starting with two episodes. And I'm with Wingrace. To me, that just shortens the season.
Yep. Wingrace also says he finds it interesting that Disney doesn't have any of the back catalog. So after these few episodes, they won't even have content for new fans to dig into.
It's been one of the talking points from the beginning. And I have to think that this is what Russell T. Davis has been doing for the last couple of years, is trying to figure out how that can happen.
Right.
That how to make the back catalog available, because the BBC says that they want to get more into the business of being a distributor, being, you know, the brand manager, rather than producing new content. And so, you know, surely it will behoove them to get Doctor Who out there.
And case in point, you brought it up and you explained this to me. I brought up the fact that on, I believe it was New Father Brown and the latest season of Silent Witness, it doesn't have the BBC logo. It just says BBC Presents at the beginning.
Right. Exactly.
So
that's what's happening.
Well, speaking of what's happening, let's move on from series 14's premiere date, but not, you know, we're talking about how many episodes and the content revolving in those episodes. And I think that would be perfect for me to say the one and only Stephen Moffat is confirmed to be returning to write. At first, I read the Christmas episode, but now I'm reading today a season 14 or 2024 series episode. So does that mean he's writing both, or does that series 14 or 2024 series mean the Christmas episode?
Yeah, with it, that would include Christmas. Yeah, who knows? But we know that has he come away owning the character of River Song? Is that the...
It's pretty much, I think, a gentleman's contract or a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah.
That
these are not the old days, yeah.
Right. He would not necessarily own it, but she appearing on television would be written by him.
Right. That's right. Because they can, she can be on Big Finish or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah. So you and I are saying, oh, goody gumdrops. This means the return of River Song.
Quite possibly. I mean, if any perfect storm were to happen, this is the perfect storm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think just like he kind of, you know, the Moffat lies, just like the Doctor lies, she's kind of been coy about whether or not she would return.
Oh, Alex Kingston.
Yeah, Alex Kingston has. So,
yeah.
We
shall see.
I'm just assuming, because I'm seeing him, that she's returning. But I'm just happy, you know, he's writing. It's sort of like recreating the best of seasons or series 1 through 4. You've got Stephen Moffat writing some. You've got RTD at the backbone. Just awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, anything else before we move on, my friend?
I don't have any Doctor Who news, that's for sure. So,
all right. So for everyone listening, I want to say, if you have not seen the Zygon invasion, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative. Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review the Zygon invasion. This episode was the 7th episode of the 2015 series of Doctor Who, first airing on the 31st of October, 2015. It starred Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor and Jenna Coleman as Clara Oswald. All right, Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you because I have no choice.
Where is Clarence?
He got lost in the Zygon invasion.
Oh, maybe dear. So. Oh, well, we may get two or three Clarences when we get. Okay. Yeah, this is, I had forgotten that this was their Halloween show, which is kind of fun because people are sort of wearing masks, kind of. They're masks that make it impossible to tell who's underneath them, which is, so that's a lot of fun. I had not watched this one again since it had aired before. And so there are a lot of things about it that I had completely forgotten. It's a lot of fun. I'd forgotten how strongly connected to the 50th anniversary special it was, which makes perfect sense that we actually started with a recap of that. A little bit of trivia. This was written by Peter Harness, who would later write for the War of the Worlds miniseries that I quite liked.
Interesting.
And directed by Daniel Netheim. I'm guessing he says Netheim, who we remember, Kyle and I, as having also directed episodes of Broadchurch. Mm. So this is a director who has previously worked with David Tennant and Jodie Whittaker. So there you go. Neither of whom are in this episode.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy this episode?
I did. It's proper scary. That's why I was saying I didn't remember this was their Halloween episode. Yeah, there's just a lot about it that's genuinely terrifying if you are really taking it seriously. It's the thing that works so well in the film, the John Carpenter's film, The Thing, when you don't know who's who. And if you're wrong, you're going to die. I always think that's interesting. And this is an episode where that really gets played to maximum effect. Mm. There you go.
All right. So for me, you know, I don't know. Maybe I just like a certain genre of story. And this one for me just kind of fell flat, to be honest with you. I know it's a two-parter, and I know it's setting up a lot of things that are going to pay off next episode with an awesome, awesome performance by Peter Capaldi. So kudos, you know, for next episode.
Right.
But there's some cool things in this, but I think this episode for me suffered that setup syndrome of it was so much about the setup that I didn't feel like I accomplished anything much by watching it. Because it was all set up in a way. So
I think there's like two versions of the ways that the Doctor Who two-parters can go wrong. And that spending a lot of time setting up the second episode is one of them. And the other one is having all the exciting things in part one. And then part two is about everybody running through corridors.
Yes.
You know, and we've seen both of those many times, I'm afraid, but yeah, I like the level of excitement that's built up here, even though we know that we're not going to resolve this in the next, 20 minutes or whatever. So
let me ask you this. We see the return of UNIT, and honestly, this is one of those times that I forget that UNIT, even though I know Osgood is in this story, she's integral to this story. I'm like you, I've never watched this pretty much since the last time I reviewed it on Doctor Who Podshock. So that's the last time I think I've seen this.
Yeah.
That said, what did you think of the return of Osgood? Because for all intents and purposes, as a viewer, when we saw this, Osgood was no more. Osgood had been destroyed, spoilers, by Missy.
Yep.
Thoughts?
Yep. She is completely and totally dead. And so on this show, she just turns back up again in this one. But we know there's got to be an explanation. And it's because there had been multiple Osgoods before. And to me, one of the best things in this episode is her flat refusal to say which one she is. Because that will break the peace.
Yes.
And I always enjoy her as a character. I mean, the joke of her being the Doctor's biggest fan wears thin pretty quickly. So thank goodness there's a lot more to her than this. And that kind of courage and, I don't know, it's a purity of heart. And I really, really like that. It makes her an aspirational figure. It makes her somebody you want to grow up to be, whether she's a Zygon or a human.
Right. And, you know, I love the fact that they could have told the audience, this is the Zygon version. This is, you know, they could have easily have written that to where she kind of broke the fourth wall and looked and said, yeah, like, you know, I'm the human. Or you, no, you know, you could have done that. They didn't choose to do that. They left it up. The Doctor didn't know. She didn't tell. You know, I thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah. And in fact, she says that she is, in fact, a combination of the two.
Yes. So
and I think I kind of missed that. So I was sort of like, wait, when did that happen? But, you know, never mind. Move on.
I think she was just playing coy with the Doctor in that statement.
That would make sense. Yeah.
You know, because he was basically saying, oh, come on. I know you're the human, right? And yeah. I think that was just her just misdirecting. I'm not telling you, you know, which one I am.
Yeah. But your bigger question about UNIT, though, to me, that's one of the most interesting things about the episode. I've missed them from the good old days, by which I mean the third and fourth Doctor, where they were a constant presence. And they're the guys with the guns. And it's almost always ineffectual. They'll go out and shoot at something, and it doesn't do any good. And the Doctor has to come out and come up with another way and to figure out how to, make things happen. The Brigadier, you know, famously says, just once, I'd like to meet a foe who isn't impervious to bullets. Because it was happening a lot at that point. So now we've got Kate, who has become the heir to this kind of thing. She's got the men and women with the guns and with the high tech and who know things, but they're still sometimes ultimately helpless. And, you know, they need the Doctor. In this case, she's very much like, what is the relationship? The Brigadier was her father, right?
Right. The Brigadier was her father.
Yeah,
She's Kate Lethbridge Stewart. She just went by Stewart to stand on her own.
That's right. You know why I was getting confused is because I keep thinking that Gemma Redgrave is the daughter of Vanessa Redgrave, famous actress. She is not. She is her niece. But her grandfather was Michael Redgrave, the famous, also famous actor, you know, who had three children and, you know, all of them actors. And then, so now third generation is Gemma. Famous acting family in Britain. When I saw my hero, Brian Blessed, in person, it was at the Redgrave Theater. So that's the kind of status they have. Anyway, so here she is as she's got to be the boss and she's got to be the one who says, okay, the line is drawn here. If we have to kill everybody, we will. And I think as we record this, forces in Israel are still raining down death on Palestine, or Gaza specifically. And the logic behind it is that we, meaning Israeli government, they have to root out Hamas. well, we're killing civilians in the process. Say, well, Hamas uses human shields. You know, if they're going to build their base under a hospital, what are we going to do? We have to get them. And I couldn't hear those speeches from Kate without thinking, my God, you think this is an outrageous situation in this fantasy TV show. But that's really how these things happen. Is you have a military leader who says, well, we got to get them. I don't know. Let's just mow the whole country flat. That'll get them. Yeah, but there are civilians here. Well, that's how it goes. You know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So the doctor has to come into this and say, are you insane?
And he really does that several times.
He literally says, are you insane? And yeah, it has a poignancy that maybe, maybe it didn't have in 2015, or because there's some kind of a conflict like that always going on. But yeah, 9 years later, I could only see this about being what's happening in Israel. So.
You know, it's funny. Well, not funny that you brought that up in particular. That subject is not funny, but it's funny in the sense that, or ironic in the sense that you brought that up, because last night when Clarence and I were discussing Star Trek, we were going back and talking about season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. And I think in that episode, I made the statement that in 2016, 2017, 2018, when series 2 of Discovery came out, watching it again, that complete season this past weekend, the AI that they were referring to, you know, was much more thought provoking for me today than it was 4, 5, 6 years ago, because that was something from the future. Now it's not necessarily so. Yeah. Likewise, it's interesting how we can watch a Doctor Who episode all these years ago and now today watch it and have a different context.
That's right.
That, in a way, I think is going to help raise my rating a little bit because it helps anything that, you know, resonates well that you can graft on something else too, I think.
Well, that's right.
Is good writing.
Well, tell me what you think about this, because this is sort of the flip side of this question.
All right.
Is that if you are of a certain bent, then you will probably hear this episode as it's like they intended this to be a parable about Israel and Gaza. And I have friends in Israel who do not approve of what's happening and who really wish for regime change in their own country. So I want to make that clear that when I say Israel, I mean Netanyahu and the powers that be that have made this decision that we have to destroy everybody in the path to get to Hamas. So I shouldn't use the name Israel to mean that, because they do not speak with one mind there. But here's the other thing. The Zygons, when we hear them talking to each other, where they're having to stand their ground, they say that what they want to do is normalize, and that they demand the right to be themselves. And this is language that some groups in our country use to try to defend their rights. And I would defend them to my last breath. You know, this is... A lot of our LGBTQ friends are under attack right now. And what they will say to, you know, powers that be is, we want to normalize. We want to be accepted as being a part of this culture. We demand the right to be ourselves. So how does it feel to us to hear the bad guys in this episode saying that?
And is it ultimately how you frame it? Because the Zygons are framed in this episode as the bad guys.
Right.
But it is ultimately, as we will see in the next episode, it is not the entirety of the Zygons who are doing as they are doing. It is a splinter group. It is a subset group that is doing as they are doing.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. So, but answering your question, same thing with what you're referring to as, you know, whether I am trying to protect an identity, or is it someone who equally is looking at it as I'm going to impose, or as they say, protect my religious freedom?
Right.
Or is it, you know, whatever the case may be, where does that line cross from being I'm protecting and acknowledging what is mine to mm-hmm. I am imposing what is mine onto the masses?
Right. Right.
And I don't know the answer to that.
No. And in a lot of political debates in this country where we're so divided right now, both sides will say that, you know, that we don't want your values imposed on us. We say, well, nobody's making you do. Well, actually, you are, you know, and back and forth and back and forth. So it's great that this episode can bring these things up so that, you know, people can talk about them if they want to.
You know, one of the things that I had written down about this episode, and it goes right along with this, one of my questions that I wanted to ask is the question of the day. And it's not even a question. It's a hello.
Oh.
Welcome, Clarence Brown.
There he is.
Hey guys, how are y'all doing?
It's the Clarence inversion or the invasion,
yeah,
or whatever.
No. They cloned me and, you know, had me tied up for a little while, but I'm back. I'm back.
Well, you're back. All right. So since you're back, I have to ask you the question I was about to ask Lee, but since you're back, I'm going to ask you this question, Clarence Brown. Thoughts on with the Zygons, could they be seen as something like a refugee? Like we have refugees. Lee was just talking about Israel and Hamas, or Israel and, you know, the Gaza Strip, Palestine. Could someone fleeing that area that goes to Britain or goes to the U.S., they would be considered refugees because they are, I would assume. Or look at our doctor. His parents fled Rwanda from the genocide of Rwanda, went to Scotland when he was 2. They were Rwandan refugees. So could you assume or associate the Zygons with refugees?
Yeah, man, 100%. I don't know if you guys brought this up already, but it's very reminiscent of the Marvel Skrulls storyline. It definitely reminded me of that. And if you watch the newest movie, The Marvels, that is mentioned in that movie as well. So yeah, they do seem like they're refugees, but also at the same point, I guess in any society, you have these extremists. So you have that element coming in as well. And we can even think of the same aspect when we think about our border and immigrants and things like that. Because I think generally most of us think they're good people coming across, but there is always this contingent, even here, I mean, among our people, that a contingent of people that want to mess stuff up. So yeah, but I do see them as like refugees / immigrants in this story. And it's very interesting about or how I was actually surprised about this in the story, and I actually loved it, that we were so welcoming to them here before it all kind of went to hell in a handbasket. We were very welcoming, and that was refreshing for me. So I really love that. Although it did come down to a certain decision that we saw in the flashbacks that we got to get an episode. But yeah.
So let me ask you a question. I want to push you back just a little bit on your welcoming. Were we really welcoming?
I think we were.
But were we welcoming out of ignorance?
Yes, to a certain extent. Yes, they could not show their real form, and that's one of the reasons they rebelled, or supposedly that we got from the story, as one of the reasons they felt they needed to rebel. So, yeah, I think we were welcoming to a certain extent. And then you guys also have to add into the mix that there's a large contingent of people that didn't even know they were here. So you have to, you know, that's a different thing where they're just hearing the secret and they can blend in and everything's okay because they can blend in. You probably also extrapolate that to many other things in our past. So yeah, it's very interesting. these refugees in this story.
All right. So I want to ask your summary view before, because I have only one other question about this episode, and I want to go back and get your thoughts on something that we had in the news. So, Clarence, what was your summary view? Did you enjoy this episode? What was your thoughts?
I think I enjoyed it mostly. In a lot of aspects, it felt like a backdoor pilot for a unit episode or unit show. Because like it felt like a lot of it was unit. And, you know, I'll just add this in here real quick. It was interesting how they were just kind of in this basement, this rundown basement in this episode. And we see the heights that unit reaches in the latest Christmas special. So, yeah.
That's true.
How far we come?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to say this real quick. One of the tidbits, and I didn't write this down, but I'm going to say it before I forget it. If it's a blink and you miss it moment, but when Osgood or Kate, one, I think it's Osgood, first goes at the beginning to the safe house, it's on the wall, it's a blink and you miss it moment, you see a portrait of the first Doctor.
Ooh, yep.
That's cool.
That is very cool.
Almost like a wanted poster, it looks like. Have you seen this man? Yeah.
All right. So I want to go back, Clarence, real quick and get your thoughts on our release date real quick. We have it the 11th asterisk of May. Thoughts just in general on us getting it, because of releasing it at midnight on the iPlayer means you and I, being Central Standard Time in the U.S., get it at 6 p.m. on the 10th. Thoughts?
I think that's amazing. We have a prime time release here. No more. Well, I don't know. Were we previously getting up early in the morning to see it before? I'm not quite sure how the timing worked.
Anytime it's been released, if it was, say, 6:15, we would get it around 12:15 in the afternoon or 1:15, depending upon where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable with the prime time, with it releasing prime time here. I think that's cool.
Is it fair that we get it prime time first,
but Friday
the people
night.
In Friday night, but the people in the UK, even though they have access to it on iPlayer at midnight, don't get to watch it on traditional BBC One until the next evening.
So now it's going to be in reverse. We're going to be have spoiled it already for them as they wake up in the morning for their teen crumpets.
Right. But fortunately, 7 p.m. is midnight there, so it is simultaneous, but yeah, they'll be asleep. It is an interesting choice, and it seems like the question that people are raising is this Disney, the Disneyfication of Doctor Who, because it clearly favors us.
And let me add another tidbit to that. We're getting two episodes that evening, not one.
That's awesome. Is UK getting two as well? I hope.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Everybody gets two episodes.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Yeah, that's certainly a Disney thing. They've done it with the Bad Batch recently. They're going, and then a lot of other networks are doing it. I think Discovery's doing it. When they release their final season, they're releasing two. I guess they're. I don't know if it's where they're doing it, because both of the stories kind of go together type of thing, or is it just we want to drum up a bunch of attention at the very beginning? So it's going to be interesting. Yeah. I'm kind of excited about that. But unfortunately, we only get 10, so we get two on the first day.
I'm not sure if it's 10 or 8.
Please don't tell me it's 8.
Yeah, if it's 8, that means that we only get, as Wingrace said earlier in the chat, we only get 7 weeks before waiting again until Christmas.
Oh, wow. So,
unless they drop two every time.
Yep. Ooh. Maybe they won't.
Then it's a 4-week season.
Plot thickens.
I don't. Yeah. Okay. Wingrace says it is 8.
It's 8.
Right. Oh, man.
All right. So, really quick, Clarence Brown, your thoughts on the magnificent Stephen Moffat returning to write more Doctor Who?
Hey, I'm here for it. I'm always down for good writing. They also leaked that Chibnall will be back for the next Christmas special. So,
are you are you?
No.
Oh no.
I'm kidding.
We were talking at the beginning about how positive we are, and you have fixed to make me say something that wasn't nice.
I almost had a heart attack. I'm joking.
What?
I was like, "Are you got to be kidding me?" Oh. All right, so I want to ask you one more, and Clarence, I'm picking on you, but this is perfect because I wrote this question down specifically for you. Clara at the end is replaced by Bonnie. Your thoughts on Jenna Coleman getting to play a bad character?
Perfection. Need I say more? Chef's kiss. It was beautiful, a beautiful thing. And that might be one of the parts of the episode that knocked my score up a little bit, because I just thought it was masterful, her performance, just the slight nuance and change of how she held her neck and the sly look to the side. I mean, ooh, yeah. I like bad Jenna Coleman. I think I'm for that.
One of the questions here on my list of questions was, I guess for Clarence, cause he and I do this. Is it wrong to be attracted to Zygon Clara? Because I remember we had the same discussion about clone Martha, who was also pretty hot. So it's like, oh,
Hey, the heart wants what the heart wants, man.
All right. So I have a question before we move on. Do either of you have any other items on your list that we haven't covered before we move on?
I'm old enough to remember the original Mission Impossible TV series, which I prefer to the movies. And every week we were going to a different made-up country. And sometimes they had to strain to come up with different country names. But that was always fun. And I guess so my radar is out for things like that. In this episode, we're in Termezistan. There's no such place. Not to be confused with Turkmenistan, which is a tiny but real Central Asian country. But yeah, we're in Termezistan. Alrighty then.
Alrighty then.
Yeah. I did want to ask you guys, and I know if we were talking about the Skrull Secret Wars, we could ask the same question. Do you think if you were a soldier with a gun, could you shoot somebody who looked and sounded like a member of your family?
No.
No.
It's easy for me. Yeah. Not a chance.
I'm totally with that guy and the rest of unit there. It's like, that's not fair. Like, and the worst of it is he's got his CO in his ear saying, this is a trap shoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Is that psychological warfare on both sides?
Yeah.
You know, literally coming at him from both,
you're hopelessly trapped.
Right.
Yeah. There's something about it where, I think if they broke character for long enough, you would be willing to do it. I think I would be willing to do it if they broke character for long enough. But the whole time they're staying in character for the most part and being like, no, I know you. This is me. Remember me?
And your brain is still arguing, what if it really is? What if?
He asked her, you know, what's my birthday? And she changed the subject.
Yes.
I'm like, hey, it's not her. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No. All right. So, gentlemen, let's go ahead and get into our favorite quote. And Lee, I'm going to start with you. Favorite quote.
I've got question mark underpants.
All right, that raises some
questions.
Well, that's all right then.
That's all right.
All right, Clarence. Oh, what's your favorite quote?
Are you phoning me with your backside again, or are you really sending me a distress signal?
All right. So for me, my favorite quote was, "This is your country. Protect it from the scary monsters, and also from the Zygons."
Yeah, he doesn't get on with the unit.
Nah. All right. So that was our favorite quote. Let's move on to our favorite scene. So favorite scene, Clarence, I'll start with you. Favorite scene.
I think the low hanging fruit for me is when we get the revelation that the Clara we've been with for most of this episode, or maybe all, is not R. Clara. One of my favorites, but that's not the one I'm gonna pick. The one I'm gonna pick is, this is a complete turnaround from how I felt when it first happened. As we go back and watch these, and I see myself change over time, just with the Sonic shades or the Sonic glasses. I love the Doctor playing Amazing Grace at the very beginning on the guitar. I thought it was amazing, and I wanted more of it. So, man, how times change, because I remember I completely and utterly hated it before. So Capaldi rocks. That's all.
Interesting. That's interesting, because you'll see in just a moment. Lee, favorite scene?
I love the Doctor's conversation with Osgood as he's trying to figure out which one she is.
Yes.
And she takes control of that conversation, and it's just a lovely thing. Lovely all around. So
all right, so that almost was my favorite scene. But I think you guys will remember when we started series 8 with Deep Breath, I made the statement I was really looking forward to getting into Capaldi's era because of the growth he had from that episode to his last. And I think my favorite scene is a good example of that, because the last time we saw him, quote unquote, as president going into a airplane, it was against his will and he was not happy about it. He was in the suit. He was uptight. This one, he's doing the Richard Nixon sign with the more laid back wardrobe, the shades. Just an example of how far, even there, he's come as a progression from that last season. So
that's right.
That's my favorite scene. So
I love the fact that he did the little Nixon impression very quickly, too, the V for the peace signs, because the last U.S. president that the Doctors met was Richard Nixon.
Yep. Indeed, indeed.
Pretty cool.
So final rating. Clarence, I'll start with you. Final rating.
I'm going to give this one 3.5 Evil Claras out of 5.
All right. 3.5 Evil Claras out of 5. Lee Shackelford, what say you?
I think I dug this one a little more than y'all. I'm giving it 4 question mark colors out of 5.
Love it.
All right. I actually raised this up from where I had started, which was 3. So I'm going to raise it up to 3.5 after the discussion and just hearing you guys talk. To 3.5, I don't know if she's a Zygon out of 5. So
but
that's
matter.
My final rating. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. But you know what does matter, Clarence Brown? Where, if someone were listening or watching and they wanted to subscribe, how might they do that?
Well, first of all, you can subscribe wherever podcasts are found. So if you're on iTunes, well, Apple Podcasts, or any of the other Spotify, you know where to find it. We're there. So you can do that. But I will say also thank you, whichever way you're supporting the show, especially if you're subscribing. You can leave us a review or tell a friend. That also helps us out. And if you have something you want us to talk about, a review idea, etc., you can send that in along with anything else you want us to know to discussingwho@gmail.com, or hit us up at discussingwho on any and all social medias.
All right. So I want to thank also Janet Hall from joining us on Facebook. I want to thank Wynn Grace and our friend Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV for joining us in the chat. You can also, if you're on YouTube, you can also subscribe to Wynn Grace's channel, as well as After the Snap Movies and TV. Check them out. Be sure and subscribe. And gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always. Clarence, glad to have you with us. It wouldn't have been the same without you. And for everyone listening, as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.